All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, November 18th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to be breaking down every game on the NFL slate coming this Sunday and that one random Monday game. We'll talk about the DFS implications for each one of those contests and how it can affect your lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com if you like typing in less letters on your keyboard. And we're here to help you get going or continue winning with FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. All the opinions that we have here are primarily based on our projection system, which powers optimal lineups from a lineup lab for FanDuel and DraftKings. And you can get a free 3-day trial to that system, and it's just $29.95 a month after that. And that includes NFL and NBA projections. So all under one membership blanket, no better deal in the industry. Check it out free for 3 days, and we think you'll be around for day four. So that's really the best sales pitch that I can give. How'd I do with that, buddy? Pretty good?
Yeah, pretty decent.
Yeah. I'm trying to like switch it up a little bit because I know I kind of say the same things at the beginning of each podcast, but I also do want people to go to the site and purchase these things because that's how we're able to keep ourselves in business. All right, we are going to take a look at every game on the slate. Last night, I was a little disappointed. I did play the Thursday night slate mostly because of Cam, and because I thought Cam was just in such a plus matchup. And he just didn't do any of the things that I thought he was going to do, frankly. So
I passed on that slate simply because I wasn't a huge fan of Cam. What was his ownership percentage like?
I think on FanDuel it was like around 40 or 30, something like that. And DraftKings was like 25 or something. Not as high as I thought it would be. And yeah, he did. He definitely doesn't get there. I mean, it doesn't submarine everything, but not a great start to the week from him. Mostly because he doesn't get out and run enough. Kind of got buzzed off of a goal line, where I thought he was going to maybe get a goal line carry for a touchdown. Doesn't get it to give it to Stewart. Really weren't able to get a ton of stuff going against the Saints last night, all things considered. Well, considering the Saints just aren't a very good defense. Yeah. But that was that's the Thursday game. We're on to Sunday. So we're going to go through every game. We'll kind of talk about, a bunch of the players you can consider. We'll probably gloss over a couple of these plays because if you want, you can go back and check out our value play, a podcast, which we posted yesterday. And that goes to a position by position, breaking down our system's top plays. So let's start with the first game. Titans go into Indianapolis. The Colts are coming off a bye week. Where are we looking here? Does the return of Moncrief kind of bite into T.Y. Hilton's targets here for the Colts? Can we trust Mariota? I mean, Mariota has been so good over the last couple weeks. Give me some of your thoughts on this game.
Yeah, I don't know if you can trust Mariota necessarily, but I do think that you can dip your toes in if you want to try to get some high upside in a big tournament or something. I think there's enough higher priced guys in the cash game consideration. We talked about Roethlisberger and Rodgers on yesterday's podcast. That's the direction I'll go on FanDuel in particular. But yeah, I mean, the upside is clearly there. We talked about Mariota early in the season, you know, hearkening back to his showing 70% completion rate upside. He's really been tapping into that. And, you know, he's not loaded on tools necessarily, but I think the combination of him and Delanie Walker actually makes for an interesting pairing, given how shallow tight end's been and how high Walker's target share has been, 17 and 23% in the last 2 weeks. And we talked about, you know, you can consider Murray as well, but those are really the offbeat guys this week.
Yeah, you know, it's funny about Mariota. I want to think that his passing touchdowns are like a little bit in the run hot range. Like, for instance, he threw 4 touchdowns on only 26 attempts last week. That's just not sustainable. Now, 3 on 43 the week before, but then 2 on 22. He's thrown a lot of touchdowns for the total number of just passing attempts that he's had. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I haven't dove too much into that, but my guess is he's running very hot in that category because he doesn't throw a ton. Now, he makes up for it because he runs a lot. And I think that just considering that Indianapolis is just not a very good defense, I was a little surprised by the line here. Titans are not favorites, but I can see him being a chalkier play because he's just been very good and he's still not totally, totally expensive. So strong play. You mentioned Murray. Murray's a guy that we could probably think about rolling out in cash games as well because of the way they use him. And Walker, I think, was actually a guy that was showing up in some optimal lineups for us in some different iterations. So
yeah. I don't mind it.
On the Colts side of the ball, though, you know, T.Y. Hilton's a guy that we had played sort of heavily for a couple weeks in a row based on the target share. That dipped down a little bit, or has dipped down a little bit with Moncrief back. Is he just not a double digit? Like, can you not pencil him in for double digit targets kind of going forward with the way that the receiver core is sort of getting healthy now?
Yeah, I don't think you can. And you know, with him, it's a combination of if the targets aren't going to be there, then it raises his variance more than most people, just because his conversion rate in terms of targets to receptions is normally very low anyway, based on the routes he runs. So he doesn't look safe whatsoever. That being said, you know, the lower safety you get with T.Y. Hilton, the higher the upside, because as fewer people own him, you know, like his game against Chicago, where he scores 28 fantasy points, yeah, or 27 against San Diego, like the upside is going to continue to be there, whether Moncrief is there or not. It's just a question of how often he's going to tap into it. And I know for me personally, he probably won't be a part of the GPP rotation for me this week.
Yeah, he was a solid like 17 to 18% target share through the beginning of the season. And that's dipped to 11 and 13 over the last 2 weeks. Now, part of that was an injury thing with KC where he had to leave the game. So, you know, you can't read totally into that 11%. But, you know, like I said, the healthier the receiver core gets, the less balls that are going to find him in that direction. We also mentioned Jack Doyle as a tight end play. Just sort of in that, that was more of our value plays podcast from yesterday, just in that, you know, 7 to 8 target, if you're lucky, kind of guy in the $5,000 tight end price range that we just kind of hate. So this is a very interesting game. We'll own more than a couple guys, I think, from this between cash games and tournaments, just because, yeah, there's just a lot to consider for the game. The next game on the list is Minnesota and Arizona. Minnesota, actually a favorite over Arizona. Arizona's got, Vegas hates them for putting up points today, this week. I mean, just a very, very low number. They started at 20.5 and then went down to 18, just a little north of 18. Does that strike you as weird? I mean, is Minnesota's defense just this good against Arizona? Are we worried about playing anyone from Arizona just because the matchup's just bad?
Well, I think yes. I mean, Minnesota's defense is this good, but it doesn't mean we can't consider guys from Arizona. You know, one interesting wrinkle for this season is the sites are doing a better job of adjusting guys' prices based on their matchup, which mm-hmm. in the past they haven't done quite as much. So we see David Johnson go from 9,300 to 8,300 on FanDuel. That's just going to make him a high upside play. I mean, yeah, Minnesota's going to stand in the way of that to some degree, but it's not like Minnesota plays that slow. I mean, they still do rely on passing to some degree, and, you know, very much in play that he gets 22 to 25 touches, and with his explosive upside on a cheaper price, it means you can potentially spend up elsewhere. I'll give, you know, sort of honorable mention in the same category, although he's not the same level player, to a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, who, you know, seems to be threatening double digit receptions, if not hitting it every single week. So it's not that those guys are excellent, like slam dunk cash game plays, but certainly guys you can consider if all you're worried about is trying to get the most out of your upside.
Yeah, so Minnesota, early in the season, Bradford was attempting somewhere around 30 pass attempts per game as they tried to run the ball. Over the last 4 weeks, it's been 40, 40, 37, 41. They just are throwing the ball more, which is going to lead to more opponent touches, right? Like more, more incomplete passes, larger chunks of yards being taken off, taken up the field. It's just going to lead to, and this is when we talk about pace, right? Like pace of play for opposing teams is just mm-hmm. how many plays you're allowing the opposite team to run. The more you throw the ball, the more you allow the other team to run plays. So I'm a little thrown off by the line here. I'm a little surprised it dropped. And I don't know, a couple things I'm thinking about, maybe weather is concerned. I haven't looked at that yet. But this one just strikes me as weird. I do think Johnson, because he catches balls out of the backfield, is a high upside play considering his price, especially if they're trying to play from behind, because he will stay on the field for those. He'll stay on the field for just about any game script. So I could see that. Now, the other guy we mentioned was Stephon Diggs. Diggs, we talked in pretty great detail about him on the Value Plays article yesterday. We still see him as just a high target guy in this offense. They've said Patrick Peterson's going to cover him. I'm not totally positive that's the case, because that's not how Arizona has set up their defense, considering Diggs lines up in the slot. We're in agreement here that Diggs is just still a very, very strong cash game play, correct?
Oh, excellent play. Yeah. I mean, back-to-back 13 reception weeks and no price movement is going to mean that he's going to be safe almost regardless of the matchup.
Anything with the Minnesota running backs at all? I mean, Larry Fitzgerald on the other side, any other guys that we can kind of take a look at here?
No, not especially. I mean, I mentioned Fitzgerald as a high upside play, but outside of that, I don't think there's really much you're going to want to go for here.
Yeah, Fitzgerald is one of those guys. He's sort of like, it's unexciting to think about him sometimes. I mean, he had 26% target share. He had a huge week last week, 12 receptions, 10 receptions in back-to-back weeks. He's just,
yeah, I find that pretty exciting.
Yeah, you're an excitable guy, buddy, which I can always
one thing that's true about me, that would be.
Yeah, that's the one thing that would be how I'd describe you in Mad Libs. I do think that they, you know, Arizona's had some question marks with the rest of their receivers. You know, J.J. Nelson comes in last week, was totally guarded. He had 10 receptions or 10 targets the week before, and then kind of comes back, fumbles a couple times last week. They look more of Floyd and Brown, but Fitzgerald's just so consistent. Like, he's the guy that Palmer can continue to turn to game after game, when I think there is a high floor in that, even though the matchup is bad. And if they're playing from behind, it helps them a little bit more. The next game we have is Jacksonville and the Lions, another game that we actually discussed in decent detail just through our value plays article. We mentioned Bortles as being a value here. Does it worry you when you see that you're thinking about maybe in roster, because we talk about possibly rostering Bortles in cash, which makes me feel a little bit sick to my stomach, but does it worry you about rostering a quarterback in cash where the team is only projected Vegas-wise to put up 20 points, 20 and a half points?
Yeah, that's certainly not an ideal situation to be in. I guess the question you have to ask yourself with Jacksonville is, how are those 20 to 25 points going to come about? You know, it doesn't look like their plan is to run the ball to get any of those points. Right. So given that they are very unlikely to be able to score any rushing touchdowns, it's all going to come on the back of Bortles. And, you know, three touchdowns is plenty of touchdowns. You know, he's paid value on this recently in just two touchdowns. He has as many rushing touchdowns as the other running backs on the team, I believe. They might be beating him by one or something. But,
right.
Yeah, he's just good. And I mean, and when I say good, I mean good value, good on a points per dollar basis. At 7,200 on FanDuel, he just doesn't need to do much more than 20 points to pay off and help you pay up elsewhere to get, you know, both more safety and upside at higher upside positions. So while it doesn't feel like a slam dunk cash game play, like it's not one of those, you know, there's no new opportunity here. It's not a substitute guy coming in replacing a starter, but I think you can still at least consider it depending on how the rest of the lineup shakes out.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the ball, we did talk about Golden Tate has sort of taken over some of the that possession receiver piece that we were kind of penciling him in for a little earlier in the season. It wasn't working out that way, but it's back to the point where he's just a high target guy for Matthew Stafford. It makes sense with the routes he runs and Stafford's skill set. So we talked about him. We also talked about Eric Ebron being a very, very solid tight end play in this one. Again, another guy that complements Stafford's skill set.
And yeah, newfound love for the short pass, sure.
Well, right. They probably should have never gotten away from it to start. But, you know, Stafford's just an incredibly accurate quarterback. He's fifth overall in completion percentage this year. And on a list with guys that are elite-level quarterbacks like Tom Brady and Drew Brees, I mean, Stan Bradford's also up there. Is Stafford a guy that you can consider just because of how accurate he is? Like, does he give you a floor for cash games or against Jacksonville? Or is this kind of not the way you want to go?
I mean, he does give you a reasonable floor, I suppose, but it's low enough to where I don't know that you need to pay $8,000 for it. I mean, Stafford doesn't compare very favorably with even like Marcus Mariota,
right.
Just because Detroit is playing more of that ball control style. They're, you know, threatening to play from ahead here, which doesn't really favor Stafford necessarily. So I'm not hugely in love with that play.
What about a guy like Theo Riddick, who they'll give him carries? He's not a particularly good between the tackles runner, but he almost becomes like a de facto wide receiver at times, again, in that like old short passing game idea with Stafford. Last game, only 14 for 70 and then one catch. But the game before, he had 11 attempts. He also had 8 receptions for 77 yards. What is the floor like for a guy like him if he's going to be their kind of every down runner? Like, how do you view a guy like Riddick?
Now, you don't play him for his floor. You play him for his ceiling. You know, he reminds me of a guy like Darren Sproles, where if you play him, what you're hoping is that he catches a few long receptions, yeah, and then does enough in the running game to sort of pad things up. Maybe he punches one in from 7 yards out or something like that. But just simply looking at the game log, even when he gets 18, 15, 19 touches, just being not a goal line back really takes a lot of the floor away from him. So, and it's 6,700 on FanDuel. That's actually a premium on what you usually have to pay at that sort of player profile. So not a guy I'm particularly interested in.
Onto the Bucs and the Chiefs, some interesting injury news coming out of this one. It doesn't really look like Jeremy Maclin's going to play this week. He has not practiced at all, sat out last week. Really, if I were to bet money on it right now, Friday 10:50 Eastern time, I would say he doesn't play. Does that make Tyreek Hill, at this point, just like a cash game play? He saw a ton of targets last week. They don't have him mentioned the way of receivers. How do you see a guy like Hill, assuming Maclin's not going to play?
Yeah, I mean, the trends on Hill are all positive, right? I mean, he's adding snaps. He's adding, increasing on his target share in those snaps. And, you know, we often see this kind of thing shake out where there'll be a wide receiver on a team who plays a very limited number of snaps. But when he comes in, the plan is basically to make him the first or second read. And that kind of looks like what Tyreek Hill has been doing so far. And it's working out pretty well. I mean, you normally don't get a guy who comes off the bench and can put up 10 receptions. Like, wide receiver doesn't always shake out that way, but it does occasionally. I mean, we saw this with Cameron Meredith in Chicago earlier this season. I do think Hill, and what Hill really does for you is, given the lack of, you know, injury replacement options that we have this week, which seem, you know, really, really low for this late in the season, he seems like a very easy way to just slide a guy in, probably get a pretty reasonable floor and not get crushed, you know, because you can't pay up for any of the good options at other positions.
I suspect he's a pretty chalk play. Definitely on DraftKings, where the price is only $4,500 right now. I can't imagine. That's just a great price for a guy if you think he's going to get double-digit targets. Almost not a must play, but really, really close. Just because, again, like you said, we don't have a lot of these guys coming up this week. It's a little different to get these guys at wide receiver than it is at running back, because you can fall victim to just double coverages, or you can fall victim to just that it's not working out with the game plan. They look more at Kelsey this week or something like that. But overall, it does sure seem like he's going to be a very, very popular play, especially considering he's coming off a huge week where he fills in for Macklin, goes 10 for 89, actually gets a couple rushing attempts. So
yeah, and I think we should be a little bit careful. Like, I don't know that you can just pencil him right in for 10 plus targets. The track record isn't totally there just yet, but the fact 13 targets on 38 snaps, like, if he just gets more snaps, he's starting to look even safer. So I think generally spot on, although, you know, we have seen guys like this disappear before too. So,
what about a guy like Spencer Ware? The Chiefs are heavy favorites. We're typically looking for running backs in this kind of game script where we think they're going to get up and then try to, you know, run out the lead. Does Ware get enough carries to have that kind of floor? Or are you kind of worried about his, just the way they've been using him in the offense?
Yes, Ware's a little bit of a tricky one to figure out. I mean, I looked at him pretty carefully for this week's, you know, we always audit the projections and try to make sure that we're spot on when it comes to carries and targets going into a week. And now last week, you look at it on a score basis and you're like, well, the Chiefs won 20-17, but they really did that because they scored 17 points in the fourth quarter. And right. So if you didn't notice that detail, you might think that they're kind of moving away from the run a little bit. I actually do think his 13 rushes compared to Charcandrick West's 2 are a pretty promising sign, all things considered. And you can probably pencil him in for at least an improvement on that. Whereas, you know, again, just when you look at his game logs and you're like, ugh, he missed a game, then only 13 carries, I don't think that tells the whole picture. So he probably is. He's all at once safer than he looks, and arguably too expensive for even that increased level of safety that you're getting there.
We have him for 16 carries and 3 targets on the day. Does that seem...
sounds right.
Yeah.
And 7,700, that's just not an inspiring total for me.
Right, and that's really the problem, is the price. Like, if you knew he was going to be a 20 to 21 carry a game guy and just going to be on the field for, you know, most of the downs, I think you'd feel fine about it. But the Chiefs just don't do that. Like, they just don't rely just on one running back. They're not full on running back by committee, but they've been hesitant to run a guy into the ground. Probably correctly. Most teams, you know, struggle with this idea.
And they've dabbled in it, right? Like, you know, the big game against Oakland where Ware had 24 carries for 131 and a touch with a couple of receptions. Like, if they get up big, it's in play. The problem with the Chiefs is, like, they just don't have a dynamic offense, so they need to get up big on the back of their defense. And while that can happen, it's not particularly likely. So Ware probably is an outside looking in guy for me.
On the flip side of the ball, the Bucks last week, Mike Evans goes from somewhere in like that 17 to 20% target share, almost on lock on a week-to-week basis, and dips down to 8% last week.
Yeah, like you do when you're in a ton of lineups in DFS.
Right. So do you see that game as an outlier? I know there were concussion issues on him, so leading into that game. Outlier game, you know, can you see him bouncing back, especially if they're playing from behind? How do you view a guy like Evans, who is just, I mean, has been like one of the top targeted guys in all of the NFL this year?
Well, Evans is another guy. Like, I think it's easy to look at this game and write it off as a game script issue because you see the final score, 36-10. But it really wasn't like that in the first half. I mean, and frankly, Evans got all of his targets in the second half when they were already up. Like, he was not a part of building that lead whatsoever. And so that is pretty troubling. I mean, when it comes to concussions, it's just one of those things. A guy passing the concussion protocol can mean anything from he's literally exactly the same player that he always is,
sure,
to he's going to be like two steps slow and lost and totally out of the game script. You know, like, teams just report and deal with concussions so variably that it's really hard to know, and simultaneously really hard to feel great when it comes to projecting performance. So as far as Evans is concerned, all that leads him to me to just be a high upside guy who probably a lot of guys are fatigued on going into this week. Because listen, there's going to be another game where Evans gets 15 targets this season. There's almost no doubt about it. He's their clear red zone target and deep ball threat. So yeah, the upside's there, but safety, I feel pretty uneasy about it.
Moving into the Giants and the Bears, Giants are big favorites, -7.5. Bears are just a total train wreck right now. We talked a little bit about Cutler last game in the sense that he's so bad, and we talked about him in reference to Zach Miller because we were considering, you know, with Alshon Jeffrey out, there are targets to go around for the Bears. You know, again, not all targets for every team are created equally. When you have a guy like Cutler throwing you the ball, I mean, kind of anything is possible, and mostly bad things. Like last week,
anything is possible.
but this is like the bad thing. Like last week, he got his one touchdown because he threw a 50-yard Hail Mary at the end of the half that just got miraculously caught by Cameron Meredith. And that was kind of like all he did, basically the whole game, except for get sacked.
Man makes his own luck, Doug. He got the ball there.
Yeah. So where do you? I mean, we talked about Miller as still a cash game consideration, just because Cutler does throw him the ball, and Miller's cheap, and you know the Bears just don't have receivers. On the Giants side of the ball, they're expected to put up a decent amount of points for them. The game script could go his way. Do you think Rashad Jennings got 15 carries and some targets last game? I mean, Odell Beckham is still obviously an elite play. What do you look at the Giants side?
Yeah, the Giants aren't a team that's been strongly on my radar so far this week. And I think it's just because it's some combination of guys being a little bit more expensive than you'd like them to be considered a real value. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of changing roles to, you know, bring anyone up into the value consideration for me. And just similar guys, like guys in similar price range that I perceive to have higher upside. Like Odell Beckham's a fine play and certainly a reasonable guy if you just want a high-priced receiver that's going to be lower owned than guys like Antonio Brown. But, you know, we've talked about this. We just play fewer big tournaments in general thanks to that keeping everything up and adjusting to last-minute news for our user base. So sometimes those guys slip off my radar a little bit, like just the straight separation play, right? Like I just don't think Odell Beckham Jr. is a better play than Antonio Brown, and I'm not going to play two $9,000 receivers, so I just won't play him in cash games. But yeah, in terms of a straight pivot, very, very reasonable play.
All right, actually, tell our listeners about No Halftime, then I'm going to give you a couple No Halftime challenges based on Beckham.
Sure. So No Halftime is an app that is one of the sponsors of the DFSR podcast and our site in general. And what they do is that they offer an innovative fantasy contest where essentially it's a one-on-one, one-player daily fantasy contest where you sign up, you choose a player, and you can either issue a challenge out into the world. So you could say like Odell Beckham versus Jordy Nelson, and you know, you could just put that challenge out there, choose an amount of money, and someone will choose it or they won't. If they don't choose it, you get your money back. And if they do, then you put yourself in a position that you thought was advantageous. The other way to play is just to go log into the app and just cruise around and try to find a good, like what you perceive to be a good matchup for you. So, you know, people will all the time put out great bets on your half, and you can just take them. You can actually use the DFSR optimizer to project out the fantasy points and do quite well for yourself there. And last but not least, you can use promo code DFSR25 to get up to a $25 bonus for, it's 100% bonus up to a $25 deposit. So that's DFSR25. And that is nohalftime.com.
All right, so No Halftime this week. You know, we talked about these receivers already, varying levels of trust for different reasons on them. All right, so my first No Halftime challenge is Odell Beckham versus Mike Evans this week.
Well, that's a pretty good one. My gut tells me Odell Beckham.
Okay, I think I would go that way, but I'm wondering if I'm just a little too 1 week thinking about Mike Evans. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if sometimes we get caught in the 1 week sort of just swaying our decisions too much. But again, we try to evaluate each week is not created differently, each week is created differently in that you just don't know. But I think I'd probably go with you there as well. What about Odell?
You can make the same argument, I think, against Odell Beckham, the 1 week argument, right? Like the three of his last 4 weeks have been great and 1 week was bad. So.
Oh, for sure. And what about, Odell Beckham versus Stephon Diggs?
Oh, Beckham.
Interesting. It's funny about those two guys because we have them actually projected very, very close to each other, and which is going to point to Diggs being an insane value over Beckham.
Well, you just don't put Diggs in there because you can just get Diggs against a much worse receiver and still get that challenge taken. You know?
Oh, interesting. So you could go like Stephon Diggs versus like Jordan Matthews. That's actually exactly. A bad one because he's against Seattle. Stephon Diggs versus like Allen Robinson, maybe.
The great thing about No Halftime is there's no such thing as you just get put in a contest with someone and you're like surprised. You're like, oh, they got that guy I didn't think of. It's like, no, you just don't maybe you think Diggs is better than Beckham, but you can get better value there.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because you can look at it. You mentioned using our base projection system as a way to inform your no halftime decisions. And, you know, Diggs is 7,000 and Robinson is 7,400, and we have Diggs for 3 more points than Robinson. So anyway, a lot of different ways you can go with no halftime. Really like the app. Go over and check it out. Next game is the Bills and the Bengals. The Bills are coming off a bye week, but Shady McCoy back up to like that 21 rushes, a bunch of targets out of the running game after he sat out a few weeks with the injury, whereas like the Bills just kind of like forced him to play. Really weird situation with him. But is he back to being sort of like a high floor running back if you think the carries are in those 20s and he's going to get targets out of the backfield?
Yeah, I think that's a relatively good way to describe him. High enough floor on his price is another question. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I mean, you certainly like to see the 25 overall touches against a good Seattle defense in his last outing. And, you know, Cincinnati should be a better matchup for him than Seattle was. But I don't know that it's quite the matchup where you just want to get right back into playing him in your cash games, given that you only have to play two running backs, you know.
Yeah, he's interesting. I can see him being a tournament play. People are going to be off of him this week just because there's some better options. They're a little bit behind. The game log doesn't look great for him over the last 4 weeks. A lot of that's the injury concern. But if you think that he gets back into just that fold of just three down back and they're even playing from behind a little bit, like there's lots of ways a game like for Shady, there's lots of scenarios in a game that can go right for him, right? Like that's not the case with all running backs, but he's a guy that like they're incentivized to keep on the field sort of no matter what the situation is. And I do think that's what provides him a high floor for me. And I do think people aren't going to play him in favor of maybe some guys slightly up the price tier. What about a guy like Robert Woods? Saw a ton of targets in the last game. Is he a guy that, you know, can Tyrod throw to him enough to, you know, have him be sort of in contention? Or I don't know, is Woods just like way too variable?
I think it's way too variable for your cash games, but you know, you don't see a lot of guys with 4x points per dollar upside for your big tournaments. And given how cheap he is, and I think he's still plenty off radars just because he didn't punch in a touchdown. And the fact that his team, you know, didn't play last week also helps too. So I think the confluence of those factors leads him to being a guy that will be all at once high upside enough and off radars enough on a pretty big week that definitely worth, you know, at least looking at.
AJ Green's a guy on the Cincinnati side who, you know, it's funny. We played him like once or twice this year, and I feel like he's a guy that kind of falls in this, you know, he's always just like just on the outside looking in on our projections. He's always really high up there in terms of just raw points, but because of maybe just pricing differences or just like a matchup is a little bit better here and there, he's not a guy that we default to a lot. What do you think about him? Because he's been kind of like, he's been really consistent over the last like month or so.
Yeah, well, I find this Buffalo matchup actually pretty fascinating this week because Buffalo, while they don't allow, teams haven't tried to pass on them very often this season, but when they have, they've been really successful. So they're tied for the highest overall yards per attempt allowed at 8.3. And that's just excellent for a guy like Green, who's really going to thrive on, you know, making the most out of the targets that he does get. And so Green, I think you made a good point. The reason he doesn't show up in optimal lineups on most weeks is because he's priced alongside guys like Antonio Brown or Mike Evans or, you know, even high-priced running backs like Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. And he's not that quality of a guy overall, I don't think. But given that he's down at 8,200 on FanDuel, he starts to sneak back up into consideration. I mean, you know, he's definitely a red zone target. You love the 20% plus target share that he can get. And if the yards per attempt are that good against Buffalo and you just figure a slightly different game script or a slightly different plan, you could see him putting up some pretty big totals here.
Buffalo, actually, according to DVOA, is ranked dead last against wide receiver ones this year, 27.1% worse than league average. It's just that what keeps them down a little bit is that they're, like you said, they're horrible when they get passed against, but they just don't get thrown to a lot because you know, the pace of play is slow. It's hard to get a lot of possessions versus Buffalo because they run the ball a lot.
Well, and some of that could be matchup too. You know, like it's hard to evaluate strength of schedule, but yeah, the fewest overall attempts against them. The other thing is if you're just beating a team, you don't need to keep passing against them. And part of that could be the issue too. So, you know, I think it's worth just being honest and saying, like, we don't know enough about football to where we're not like Jaws or whoever, you know, like watching the film and breaking down why teams might be running more and not passing and whatever. But I think it's safe enough to say that just because teams haven't passed a ton against them in the past doesn't mean that they won't in the future.
Right. So there's game scripts that could really, there's game scripts that for this one that could really have Green being like the top wide receiver of the week, right? Like, yeah. I don't think he's not a favorite to do it, but it's, I would say, considering, you know, things that could go right for him, there's a lot of things that could go right for him that could have him in that upper tier.
And it's funny, if you look at their schedule so far this season, you realize that just not all schedules, and this is why football is just kind of dumb in general, because the sample sizes are always small. But so they got Baltimore, the Jets, Arizona, then New England without Tom Brady, then they have the Rams, then San Francisco, then Miami, and then they just get torched by New England and Seattle. So they've actually been a pretty bad defense, all things considered. And you could see a scenario where just taking Cincinnati, taking the over, like grabbing AJ Green, and unfortunately there's that running back by committee kills you elsewhere. But yeah, this could be a huge week for the Bengals offense for more.
Well, if you rank 32nd in the league in DVOA against wide receiver ones against that schedule, then you're actually probably worse because there's not a really
wide receiver ones on those teams.
Exactly. So like really no, and again, we run into labeling issues sometimes with things like this. It's a little bit better to look
at the data collection process.
Yeah. Right? The better way to do it is to kind of look at where opposing cornerbacks and wide receivers line up, you know, in terms of just like left, right slot and sort of weight it out that way. That's actually the better way to do it. But really, no matter which way you data collect wide receiver one data on that, like it looks bad for the Bills because there just isn't a guy. There just isn't a guy in there that is like a top tier receiver. So if you've been that bad against that group, I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself more into AJ Green here. I think that he actually could probably be the tournament play of the week this week. So look at us just fleshing it out on the podcast. Let's get into the next game, which is the Ravens and the Cowboys. Cowboys again, big theme of this week is if you're -7.5 favorite, like every single game is like a -7.5 favorite. It seems like Cowboys fall into that group again with a game like that against the Ravens. Does Ezekiel Elliott, just considering the way the Cowboys are using him, is he still just, I don't know, sort of near the top of the tier of just running back ones because they want to run the game out? That's been their modus operandi since the beginning of the season. Does that continue this week?
Nah, the matchup is too bad. I mean, Baltimore allowing just 3.3 yards per carry. You know, Ezekiel Elliott getting most of his value on the ground, not catching balls out of the backfield necessarily. The other guys you can consider at similar prices, he's just not a guy I'm going to play.
I'm just not catching balls out of the backfield, except for his 2 for 95 and a touchdown last week. I know that's an outlier because he just
That was a great job by him when he got those two receptions and turned it into almost a full wide receiver day of production. But yeah, no, it just general. I'm talking about generally, Doug. Thanks.
It's funny too. Like Romo comes out this week. This isn't DFS related, but Romo comes out this week and basically hands the reins over to Dak. Everyone just goes ape about how great Romo is. I guess it's a nice thing for him to say. He should say it, just like not make it a controversy at all. The Cowboys again expected to put up points here. The points theoretically have to come from somewhere. I think you can see Zeke being another cash game play again because people are going to fall in love with the overall total. I'm not totally trusting it just because, like what you said, the Baltimore defense is able to handle the run. You could see some maybe a couple more passing attempts for Dak this week, but generally just not a game I'm going to be going to for the Cowboys. Over into the next game is the Steelers and the Browns. This is a game that we spent a lot of time talking about. If you want our breakdown, we basically said Big Ben, Bell, and Brown are all just, if you can find ways to almost get all three of them into cash games, it feels like a pretty high floor. Are we still kind of sticking with that idea here?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to go away from it. I mean, they're so top heavy and so concentrated on those three guys that they can sustain. Like, you don't see a lot of teams that can sustain two $9,000 skill position players, but the Steelers are the outlier there.
If you think the Browns are playing catch up, which it really, really seems like they're going to, a guy like Terrell Pryor. Pryor's seen target shares of 21%, 17%, and 20% over the last 3 weeks, and then he has another 20% in there. Is he a guy that you like from a, you know, Cleveland's playing from behind, they're going to need to pass, he just sees some volume with a little upside?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the upside is there. We've seen him put up some huge performances so far this season. Not recently, though, and I just don't... in the category that anyone is GPP playable, I think Pryor is as well, but I don't think he's a guy you need to prioritize.
Whoa, buddy, with the wordplay. That's great.
Yeah,
great.
That's right.
We don't should end the podcast on that.
Mic drop.
Yeah. The next game is the Dolphins and the Rams. I get so tempted each week to just say the Rams and then just skip them. They're such a brutal team. They're brutal to watch. They're brutal to try to – you don't even need to project them because they just do nothing. But also they hold other teams from doing nothing because they do nothing and they kind of just like stand around the field for a long time. The other team doesn't get to run any plays against them. Is this game
– I'm going to listen back to this afterwards because it's just so thrilling to hear about how everyone does nothing.
Yeah, hit the old do nothing podcast. I mean, is this game just like kind of a total skip for us? I mean, even JHI, he's still getting carries. Can we consider anybody here?
Sure, I think JHI is a guy you can consider, and that's where it stops pretty much. I mean, one thing that just struck me when I looked at this game was Todd Gurley at 6,700, and he's still not a play. Like,
right.
Just, man, how the mighty have fallen, right? Like, that team is just completely in shambles. There's no Rams, and I think Jay Ajayi is a guy you can definitely consider for big tournaments, but again, for cash games, you can do better.
Well, because teams can just say, they just look at Gurley, and they're just like, well, we stop him, and it's just kind of over. I mean, 21 carries for 64 yards. Sure. This guy's supposed to be like sort of like transcendent talent-wise, and 5,000, he's 5,000 on DraftKings. I mean, this guy was like 9,000 to start the year.
Tavon Austin contract just looks like a complete mess right now. It's not a good situation.
If Todd Gurley had been $5,000 to start the season on DraftKings, he would have been 100%. Exactly. He would have been the first ever 100% play. I think like it would have just been, no one could have gotten it. It's just crazy how much the price has dropped, and it's crazy that you still can't do it. It's mind-boggling. Anyway, moving on from that game, because I don't really want to spend too much time on that nothing game. The next one is the Patriots and the Niners. Patriots projected for the most total points on the week, 32 implied points. Niners are 19. They stink. Huge favorites. We mentioned yesterday that we did not put Brady in the cash game consideration piece because of, he just wasn't like the Patriots just haven't been throwing enough this season for him to, for the floor, the relative floor to be high enough for him. But they have been running the ball. If they're 13-point favorites and they want to get out of this one, just, you know, with all everybody intact, is LeGarrette Blount, does he see enough rushes to be a cash game guy, considering he doesn't really catch any balls out of the backfield?
Oh, I think so. I mean, and this is why when you're ever listening to a podcast about guys you can consider for cash games and some for others, I think our strategy overall is to not hedge too much. I think you can start throwing the baby out with the bathwater when you say got things like, yeah, you can play Jay Ajayi in your cash games. Sure, it's a good matchup, because the fact of the matter is, LeGarrette Blount at this price point, for my money, is just such a better option than the other guys in the same price point. And it's very rare that you can play two guys at the same price at the same position. Mm-hmm. It's just oftentimes not the way it works out. And given the fact that Blount is, you know, locked in at about 20 rushes a game, he is the definitive goal line, you know, almost every play inside the 5-yard line guy as they try to keep Brady healthy. A touchdown in every single game except one this season. And the one that he didn't was that random game where they got shut out against Buffalo.
Yep.
Because, you know, no Brady, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, it seems like a super high floor guy to me, given the Patriots total and the way they've deployed him so far this season and their desires to preserve Brady, seems like a really great play.
With Gronk, he's the highest priced tight end. He's like in wide receiver one price tier, basically. Is that just too much for a guy? Like, is that just too much for the amount of targets that he sees?
Yeah, you're just paying wide receiver one prices for a guy who doesn't have wide receiver one production this year, so you just can't do it.
What about a guy like Kaepernick, you know, theoretically playing from behind this game, not a good thrower, obviously, doesn't have much in the way of receivers, but, you know, if they're playing from behind, he falls into that category of, you know, drop back to pass, no one's open, take off and run. He's got, you know, his rushing, since he became a starter, eight rushes, nine rushes, five rushes, 10 rushes, for somewhere in that 55 yard a game range. Is that enough to like raise his floor? Only 7,000 on FanDuel, and theoretically going to get some passing attempts, and just going to have the ball in his hands a lot here because they're going to be playing from behind. Is it, you know, where do you see a guy like Kaepernick falling, in just in terms of your, you know, quarterback depth chart kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah. So I think Kaepernick is a very interesting option for big tournaments. I mean, one thing that I think this sounds so like, I don't know, first take-ish, but one of the main things I look for in running quarterbacks is their relative hunger right now. And like, because a guy like, say, Russell Wilson or Cam Newton, like if the coaches come forward and say, buddy, just don't run or slide, you know, like you don't need to extend these runs, we just need you healthy, that really kills a lot of their value. And that's clearly not the case with Kaepernick right now. Like, they're like, you're an infantry man, you just get out there, whatever, if they tackle you, break your legs, doesn't matter, just go crazy. And it's working, at least from a fantasy perspective. I mean, you know, he's scoring touchdowns, he's topping 20 fantasy points per game. He's very much in that Blake Bortles, like I don't think we've even seen the upside on Kaepernick necessarily so far. And while he's just not, you can't talk floor on Kaepernick because the floor is he gets benched after the first quarter and you just lose everywhere. The ceiling is very, very high. I mean, particularly when they're trailing against the New England defense that really hasn't pressured the quarterback very much this season. So, yeah, I'm in. Let's get some Colin Kaepernick shares going.
Colin Kaepernick and AJ Green for all the money this week. Moving into Seattle and the Eagles, you know, the big news out of Seattle here is they cut Christian Michael. And I think they're going to roll with Procise. It seems that way. Procise is very cheap. You know, we do have Rawls coming back this week. A little bit of conflicting news about what Rawls's usage is going to be. It's really hard to expect him to like take over a bulk of the carries. He's barely played this year. And when that's the case, and there's really, I mean, there's isn't a ton of, he has still, you know, I think he was even back last week and still didn't get any carries. Is Procise just a safe running back at this point, considering just there's not, it doesn't seem like there's much in the way of anybody backing him up?
Well, you know, it's going to depend on the final word, I guess, that we get on Thomas Rawls. The Seahawks are notoriously fickle when it comes to this sort of thing. And, you know, the fact that he's supposedly going to be eased into action could mean anything from like 3 to 15 carries, as far as I'm concerned. Right. So I don't know that he's, you know, like an absolute slam dunk to repeat last week's performance. But the thing with Procise is the price is just so low that at $4,900 on FanDuel, it's, he doesn't really have to do much. I mean, he could pay that price in 12 carries, you know? So I think I'm all at once less excited about him based on this Rawls news and more excited because just the price is so excellent that, and the lack of other relative punts that he'll probably wind up making his way in the lineups for me.
Okay. So right now we have Procise at 16 carries and 5.5 targets. Does that seem low, middle, low, correct, or high?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It seems pretty much right on. Like I don't think it's terrible by any means. Especially, I mean, if you just, I think a reasonable guess to make would be that Raw slides into what kind of what Christian Michael did last week. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then I think you're probably doing okay.
And I think that's actually that's probably the best comp, right? Is that it's not reasonable to think that he's going to do more than Michael did, especially considering, again, he has not played. So
see, I don't think it's unreasonable to think he might do more. I just think it's like reasonable to suspect that that's about what he will do. You could see guys come back from injury and get more than 5 carries. Like, that's not unheard of at all.
No, it's not. What I really like about Procise is that he's not like a clear one to, or, you know, A to B switch, because Procise, it was like essentially a third down back also. Like, he can catch a lot of balls out of the backfield. And the fact that he's probably locked in for minimum that role, right? Like, they're not going to bring Rawls in for third down. Fair. So if you figure that Procise is locked into at least that role plus whatever carries, that's where I think the floor is really, really high in him considering the price. He's just too cheap. I think
that's a great point. Yeah, last week he paid his price just on his receiving total alone. So I think that's spot on.
So I think you'll see him pretty much as a chalk play. There's one other guy that kind of falls into that cheap range that it's going to be a consideration for us. But yeah, he's there. What about the receiving core from Seattle? Baldwin, guys, I think Jimmy Graham might be hurt right now. So where do you see the Seattle receiving core?
I'm not over the moon about it. I mean, even if Graham misses time, like, obviously Baldwin had the flashy 3 touchdowns, kind of harkening back to the Doug Baldwin of literally yesteryear when he was just scoring outsized touchdowns based on his opportunity. And he's cheap. I mean, he's 6,700. The upside is pretty blatantly there. I don't know that you want to pair him with Procise necessarily. And we should be clear and say these guys are all just big tournament options. But I don't know. Is there something I'm missing? Are you excited about anything?
Nah, it's hard to get excited. I think they're probably incentivized to run the ball and get out of this one if they think they're, you know, favorites to win. Philadelphia is not. You know, Philadelphia is a tough team to evaluate. They simultaneously can look great on offense and then just look terrible, which is really just what happens when you have a rookie quarterback. Like, especially a guy like Wentz is good, but, you know, still, this is a very good, still a very, not a tippy top defense anymore, but still a very, very good defense in Seattle. It's hard to imagine Wentz putting a lot together here. You know, they've kind of thrived on the ground game by kind of switching up their backs. It's really hard to imagine that really working for them in this game. So I do like the running back. I like the Seattle side of the ball, and I just like them sort of just grounding and pounding it to victory, and that's kind of how they go. The Packers go into Washington to play the Redskins. We talked a lot about Aaron Rodgers. Still consider him to be a cash game play just because of the way he accrues his fantasy points. He's basically just been paying it sort of no matter what the game has been like this year, like whether they're winning or losing. It's kind of all falls on Rodgers to get the job done. They don't run the ball a ton. They throw so much. You'd almost like him better if they're playing from behind, but I like him either way. So I think, you know, we talked about Rodgers last, and we did break down a little bit of the wide receiver core. If we talked about Jordy Nelson, though, a little bit worried if Josh Norman is shadowing him on the Redskins.
Yeah, relatively low total for the Packers this week too. Yep. So, you know, there's definitely some reason for concern there, I guess. But yeah, I think you're pretty much right on there.
On the Redskins side, you know, Rob Kelly looks like he's the clear number one back, and Matt Jones has been relegated to the backup role. Kelly, because this is the guy I mentioned in being in the same price tier. Kelly or Procise this week, I guess would be my question. Like, they're around the same price in FanDuel, 54 for Kelly, 49 for Procise. I'm pretty sure the DraftKings price is around the same. So, if, yeah, Kelly's 4,400 on DraftKings and Procise is 42. If you had to pick one of those two guys, like, in that same price tier, would you go with Kelly or Procise?
Oh, it's tough to say. I mean, I'd kind of like to play both, but it's not going to wind up working out that way. And they just offer different things, right? I mean, Kelly's been very consistently getting the running yards. He doesn't really catch the ball out of the backfield. Procise, we think he's pretty secure in the ball catching role, but, you know, the rushes might not be there. And the combination of Kelly has this pretty tough matchup with Green Bay. So I don't know that I can make a declarative statement on that just yet. I guess my gut tells me right now that given that they're so close in my mind, I just assume go with Procise and save the 500, but I don't want to say anything definitive because that all might change before Sunday.
Yeah, Green Bay fifth in the league in DVOA against the rush. That plus Kelly not catching any balls, I think I'm just willing to roll the dice on Procise. I think most people will end up going that direction too, just because I think no doubt Procise has higher upside. I don't think that really for me is in question. It's just the floor, and you only worry about it because you're just not sure about Rawls' thing. But I think either way, I'm willing to just kind of go with it on CJ and just hope for the best and hope that, you know, we can believe enough coach speak. Moving into the final game of the week is a Monday game. That's the Titans and the Raiders. This doesn't fall on the main slate. So kind of these Monday games end up sort of taking a back seat in terms of just not overall analysis, but just because of the way the sites, they don't include these Monday games anymore. They just kind of feel like less important. Oakland's coming off the bye week. You know, Latavius Murray was pretty good the week before. What do you like from this game on the Raiders side of the ball? And then I guess we can talk about the Texans, though. I kind of hate talking about the Texans.
Buddy, are you feeling unenthusiastic about the Texans this week?
I mean, they're just like, whatever. I kind of had high hopes for them. We talked about Lamar Miller early in the season a lot. I was really hoping that
It's all falling apart.
The amount of touches for him there would kind of translate over. Osweiler's been so trash. We talked about it a little bit sort of in the recap from last week. He's just so bad that you just can't play anybody from that team. Their quarterback play is about as bad as it gets in the whole NFL. So
yeah,
when that's the case,
bad.
It affects everybody.
But it is funny because this will be a two-game slate, right? The Sunday night into Monday night slate. And the pickings are somewhat slim. That being said, I mean, Latavius Murray might just be a chalk play in that slate. Three touchdowns against Denver. It's a terrible matchup. And the fact that he was able to do that, you know, show that for sure he's a definitive goal line back. Show that the Raiders will, you know, just actually run the ball and not just pass constantly. I think he'll be a chalk play in that Sunday into Monday slate. And I think, you know, Amari Cooper still tends to be priced below where his upside can wind up just because the downside is pretty dramatic too. Like if he's not converting those targets into receptions or if it just happens to be a Michael Crabtree week, he can disappear on you. But he's also got 30 fantasy point upside, and that's pretty uncommon for a guy with $7,700 price tag.
You make a good point about that Sunday to Monday slate. There are actually a lot of interesting names coming out of that, all things considered. Like you get Rodgers, you get a couple cheap running backs, maybe in Kelly, and Murray isn't that expensive.
Yeah, that's a good start.
And then you get like receivers like Cooper and Nelson, though we talked about him. Davante Adams has been a pretty high target guy, sort of on a week-to-week basis. So actually that Sunday, Monday night game, maybe it is interesting. I don't know. Look, buddy, you ended it on a nice note. You made me a little bit excited for something I was kind of feeling bummed about. All right, well, that's it for us this week, breaking down every game in the on the NFL slate for week 11. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com for short. You can go over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's informing most of our analysis on this podcast today. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. That also includes our wildly successful NBA projections, and all under one membership umbrella. And like I said, you'll sign up for 3 days and we think you'll be around for day four. dfsr.com/membership and you're all set to go. Buddy, I will talk to you next week after a successful Sunday in football.
Yeah, can't wait, man.